welcoming everyone to this Jackie Robinson Day episode of the Batflip Podcast. My name is Damon, here with Matt. We are missing David this week. I believe he's in the process of moving at the moment, so we should have him back next week. But we have a jam-packed episode today. We're going to talk about number one overall prospect, Jackson Holliday, getting called up to the major leagues. We have more on the Shohei Ohtani Ippei Mizuhara scandal after the federal investigation was kind of completed, and we got more details on that, which became wild. We're going to talk about Scott Boras and kind of how his clients have started so far, and he ended up losing one of his big clients from this offseason. We'll talk about pitchers, if they should be in the majors or the minors, kind of how their throwing programs have been going a little bit, and Indians management. And then we're going to go kind of around the history of Jackie Robinson and why today is such a significant day in baseball. We've never done that on this channel, and we felt like today, since it's actually Jackie Robinson Day, it would be a good time to go over all of that. But before we get into all that, Matt, how are you doing this week?
Doing pretty good. Been watching some baseball, watched the Masters this weekend. That was pretty boring because the guy who wins every week won by like five shots. So it wasn't the most fun thing, but I did watch that. And just watching some baseball. There's been some exciting games this week. We'll talk about a couple of them later. But yeah, everything's been going good. And also congrats to David on his big move. I know he's been working on that for a while. So, but how have you been, Damian?
I've been good. It was just nice, solid week. You know, just kind of went and hung out with my buddies this weekend and didn't really do much. Just watched the normal, you know, Supercross, NASCAR, kind of stuff like that. The series against the Padres this weekend was eventful for LA and some rain delays there, which hadn't happened since, I think, like 2014 or 2015, which was interesting. But
did you go for a lot of walks yesterday?
I did not go for a lot of walks yesterday, but the Dodgers pitching staff did.
I looked at that box score and I thought it was like a mistake.
Yeah, I think it was like Paxton had seven or eight walks at eight. One point. Yeah, and none of them had scored, I think.
They had 14 walks and three strikeouts in the game. I've never seen a box score like that.
Yeah, it was like the first time in 60 something years of the Dodgers history that they had 14 walks or something. It's some insane stat that one of the beat reporters had. But yeah, that game was very, very frustrating, to say the least. And then the whole Jurickson Profar stuff, you know, from the weekend. And of course, he was the one that got the big hit yesterday. So, that was frustrating, but overall, it's been a good week of, you know, sports in general, and I'm just ready to jump into what we got here because it's going to be a packed episode. We're going to have a lot to talk about, so let's start with, you know, Jackson Holliday finally getting called up to the major leagues. What drafted in 2022 is the number one overall pick. You know, obviously the son of former All-Star, you know, World Series champion Matt Holliday. You know, there was a lot of speculation through the spring that was he going to break camp because he had such a good spring training there. And it was kind of said that he was going to start in the minors because they wanted him to, you know, develop against more high level left-handed pitching and maybe, you know, learn to play second base some more. Well, he in the minor leagues this year, he just decided to hit, what, 333 with 482 on base, 595 slugging, a 178 WRC plus and 56 plate appearances there, and I guess that was enough to earn his promotion to the major leagues finally for Baltimore.
Yeah, you know, this was an interesting discussion topic for a while this spring. Was would Jackson Holliday debut on the big league roster or not? It's something that for a long time you never would have thought he would because of, you know, the service time manipulation thing, but that's kind of gone now with the way that the rules change with the CBA. With, you know, if you finish top two rookie of the year, then you automatically get the year of service time. So you'd have to wait a few months to make sure he didn't finish top rookie of the year, and then it's not even a guarantee if he does as well as you would hope he does. So you know that, but they ended up getting him. Getting him up pretty quick. I did think that the reasons were somewhat legit. I mean, you got to remember that this kid's only 20 years old. He's learning a new position. He's played short his entire time in the minor leagues. I think the Orioles really do want Gunnar Henderson to stick it short for now. So, you know, give Jackson Holliday a chance to play second some. And, you know, the left-handed pitching thing is something that apparently they faced a lot of left-handed pitchers in the first couple weeks of the season. So I think they kind of wanted him to get him in the big leagues when he would get off to a faster start. You know, maybe have some favorable matchups for his first couple of weeks, but it has not been a good start for him. He's 1-for-17 with 9 strikeouts so far, but he's a 20-year-old kid. He's actually been excellent defensively so far. He's already put up 2 fielding run value, +2 fielding run value, which is really, really good. It's one of the, you know, it's like outs above average. I think he's put up 2 outs above average as well. He's done very well with that. Yeah, he's been, you know, it's interesting. I'm excited to watch him. We'll see how he does. I mean, you know, it's been a rough start, but man, he was doing so well in AAA. You've got to give him the shot, you know, because he had a 178 WRC plus at AAA in his first 10 games and was just crushing the baseball. And he's looked kind of overwhelmed at the big league level, but we'll see. Maybe he'll settle in at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, especially given, like, you know, you said he was hot at AAA too. You know, had he not done what he did this spring as well, I don't think that he's probably up at this point either. I mean, in spring, he had 48 plate appearances there too and hit .311, you know, with a 148 WRC plus. Like, he showed at that point too. And then, like, had he struggled in spring and then he had done that for, you know, 10 games at AAA so far this year, I don't know if he's called up at the moment. But I think that kind of gave him more confidence. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the day they called him up was the last day that you could have somebody that got the full year of service time and all of the extra draft pick compensation if they did win Rookie of the Year or got second. I believe you have to have so many days to be eligible for that as a team. And I think they called him up on like the last day where you had to be called up by that day for that. Which I thought was pretty interesting too.
Yeah, I think it's the last day for him to without the he can get a full year of service time without. Right. So I think it's the same day. So they don't even they're not worried about the service time thing.
Well, yeah, but I think it's to be eligible for the draft pick compensation for the
right. Yeah, I agree. That's what I'm saying. I think that's the same day that becomes a thing and the full year service time thing. I think that's why they picked the day.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they really don't care about the service time and they can still get the draft pick if he gets top 2 rookie of the year. And so the reasons for holding him down must have been somewhat legit, you know?
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see, but you know, whenever the number one prospect in baseball kind of gets called up, it's a pretty big deal. So definitely had to mention that.
Who is the next number one prospect? Because Churio will graduate and Jackson Holliday will graduate.
Is it Skeens?
I guess it probably is Skeens.
Because Holliday, Lankford, Churio. This is per Fangraphs.
Yeah.
I guess Caminero, but he's already debuted too.
He debuted last year too.
So Salas? Ethan Salas?
Ethan Salas, yeah. Well, he won't debut for 18. A while, so.
Yep. Yeah, then James Wood. They have Skeens at 11, so there's some guy that's there. James Wood is crushing too. He may get called up soon. Sayo's not going to come up. Merrill's up already. Lawler's hurt. Dylan Cruz has struggled, and then Skeens is at 11. So, but we'll talk more about Skeens here in a little bit. But you know, a couple weeks ago we talked about the Shohei Ohtani, you know, the translator scandal that was going on about if he was gambling, what was going on. Well, you know, we thought the federal investigation was going to take, you know, a long time, months, maybe even a year or two. Well, the investigation wrapped up pretty dang quick. It was announced last Thursday. They held a press conference. And some of the stuff that's come out, you know, we had initially thought it was like $4.5 million is what was kind of stolen. And how did that happen? And you know, from there, but once we got some more information, the 36-page federal document that came out said that eBay had stolen over $16 million through Ohtani's bank account, and eBay helped set Ohtani's bank account up. He had it privately contained from all of Shohei's agent and representatives, saying that Shohei wanted to keep it private from them. eBay, you know, called the bank and impersonated Ohtani to have wire transfers. You know, done in through that account to himself. All the winnings went into eBay's personal account as well. But per the document, Between November 2021 and January of 2024, Ms. O'Hara made approximately 19,000 bets, which is about an average of 25 bets per day. The bets ranged anywhere from $10 to $160,000, with an average amount of roughly 12,800 bets. He lost a net total of about $40.6 million through these bets. So there's a lot more through that, but he has now turned himself into officials. I think he's released on bail right now, but he has a arraignment here in May. But just a wild turn of events in this story, which we thought we had kind of knew most of it. And boy, did it take a turn last Thursday.
Yeah, that is crazy. You know, I have a few thoughts. The first thing is that, you know, I know Shohei's got a lot of money, but it is kind of hard to believe that he wouldn't notice $16 million missing. I think it can be a lesson to two different groups. I think it's a lesson to athletes who make a lot of money and they get people to, you know, they get people to help them out with managing it. And especially for athletes from other countries who have a language barrier, you know, the whole translation thing, it's way more important than I think people realize. And I think that, you know, just these athletes need to be very careful about who they let around them, because there's so many people that will try to take advantage of you. And this could have been avoided if Shohei or somebody, you know, with the Angels or somebody with the Dodgers would have just vetted this guy, because there was lies all over his resume when he got hired. So, you know, I think it's important to remember that you need to just make sure if you're an athlete, you've got to be inquisitive, and, you know, you got to question literally everything about somebody, you know. So I think that's one important lesson for athletes to learn, hopefully, from this. And the other thing is Major League Baseball needs to learn a lesson from this, too. There's right now, you know, with the as easy as it has become to gamble in sports, the sports betting right on your phone, you know, I think that and obviously they avoided anything in this situation, because Shohei's obviously not involved in the betting part of this. But, you know, I think they need to be very careful on how they treat this, because if you're Major League Baseball, this just shows you what can happen if you're not really, really careful with the betting thing, with the promotion of gambling, and just with, you know, they're going to have to find a way to get very, to really vet that going on in the game. Cause you know, we've had the baseball's a sport that's had gambling issues in the past. You had the Black Sox scandal, you had Pete Rose, you know, it's had obvious issues before. So I think that it should be a lesson that Major League Baseball obviously dodged a bullet on this one. But, you know, this is something that what if Shohei actually had been the one doing this? Like, they need to be really careful about, you know, the betting thing. And I don't know if there's a solution to it, because, like I say, it's so easy to just in a lot of states, you can just hop on your phone and bet. But, hopefully they find a way to, you know, to at least try to figure out how to contain it a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be a touchy subject, just because of the how big it has become, like you said, the partnerships nowadays as well. You know, Major League Baseball has a rule where you just can't bet on baseball, but you can still bet on other sports, which I think is a good way to do it. But, you know, you just have to know how to police what's happening there. And none of these bets were on baseball, obviously, but, yeah. You know, the NBA is seeing a situation with this itself where a player was betting on his own games, you know, which is obviously that's a problem. So I don't know where or how you really contain or control that. But it's going to be fascinating to see kind of how, you know, what the NBA does moving forward on their side, and if other leagues, you know, take kind of those same measures or whatever from there. So, but that would wrap up pretty much everything to do with this story. So hopefully we're not talking about this again, and we can let it go. But Let's jump over to talking about Scott Boras and, you know, his clients that we've seen kind of off to a rough start so far. You know, Blake Snell so far in his two starts with the Giants has a 12.86 ERA and a 6.11 FIP. The expected numbers are a little bit better, but you're still hovering around a 4 ERA and a mid 3 FIP. You know, walks are incredibly high, which we always expect with a guy like Blake Snell. Cody Bellinger's batting 172 with a 296 on base and a 293 slugging for a 46 WRC plus. Matt Chapman is hitting 200, you know, with a 369 slugging, a 74 WRC plus. And then, you know, we haven't even seen Jordan Montgomery yet. He has been delayed. Still, I think they're talking about maybe the 19th for him making his Arizona debut. And even JD Martinez, who is playing in the minor leagues right now for the Mets, trying to rehab to get ready. He's even struggled down there, batting 125 and 51 WRC plus there. And I think he's also dealing with some back stuff right now as well. But, you know, just all of the Boras clients have really struggled to kind of start the year. And then on top of that, we just got news the other day that Jordan Montgomery actually left Scott Boras and he signed with Joe Wolf of Wasserman. That's what it was.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about this today because I think it's important. And it's kind of something that I've seen before. I don't remember who the agent was for Dallas Keuchel, but in 2019, there was Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell. And they were the two guys that year that held out. I think it was 2019. Those were the two guys that really that held out all year, and or all off season. And they got signed mid season. And those guys came up and they did not pitch well at all. Like Dallas Keuchel was coming off of a third consecutive really good season with Houston. He signed with the Braves and was not good. And Craig Kimbrell had the worst season and a half of his career after doing that. So I was concerned about these guys, and it's obviously a small sample size. They might get going, but when you drop a guy, not only are you dropping him into a new market, but he's had no, you know, he's dropping into a new team, and he had no spring training. Like, you know, especially for the pitchers, Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery, the catchers don't know them really well. You know, Blake Snell's never worked with Patrick Bailey. You know, I think with Jordan Montgomery, you know, he's never worked with Gabriel Moreno. You know, I think that's important to remember, that, you know, there's just a lot of new stuff for these guys. And a lot of times it takes, well, for a lot of players, when they join a new team, it takes a whole year before they really kind of click with a new team. And these guys are putting a lot of, and Boras in general, they're putting a lot of stock into a 1 year, you know, deal, prove it deal, when you're probably not going to put up your best season when you start late. And I think he's just screwed over these four players, and or really five players, although JD Martinez was a veteran player that was probably getting a 1 year deal anyways, because he's kind of older and there's some red flags with his, you know, with his approach at the plate the last few years and stuff. But, you know, I think it's really important to remember. And I mean, Blake Snell, you know, remember when he went to the Padres that first year was constantly, you know, he was constantly walking guys, and it came down a little bit, you know, over the last couple of years. I guess last year it did, but you know, the walks and the just the amount of innings he's been able to throw have been a problem for him. And you look at the bats. I mean, Cody Bellinger has been horrible to start the year. Now his is partially BABIP based too. He's got a very low batting average on balls in play. He's gonna be better than this. I think he'll be fine. And Matt Chapman's kind of the same way. He's got an extremely low BABIP so far, but you know, they're obviously not off to great starts. So I think that you know, I think that you look at this situation and you hope that these guys figure it out, but you know, you're kind of looking already with these two pitchers, especially in Snell and Montgomery, and thinking, you know, they've got player options for next year. So, you know, how's that going to look? Like, if Blake Snell just is a bad this year, like, how's that going to look next year, you know? So it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, we've got a long way to go. It's small sample. but it kind of sucks for these guys that they're basically doing spring training in the first month of their walk year. I mean, that really sucks. And I think you're going to see it's going to have some implications next year, too, because I don't think Boris is going to be able to do this again. I think his clients are going to pressure him to get deals done next year. And he's got a couple big ones next year. You think about Juan Soto, you think about Alex Bregman, and I know he's got other guys too. All these guys, like, they're going to want to get deals done quick. And I think it's going to be a buyer's market a little bit because of that. So I think Boris just really screwed himself over with this whole situation this offseason.
Yeah, I think it was the Just Baseball guys that were talking about it today, I want to say. But they made a good point. Like, Boris, is this the end of Boris being like the top agent, right? Like, he'll obviously still have his guys. He'll still be involved for sure. But like, there was a long time where Boris just controlled the game, right? With every top free agent was just a Boris guy. And he, like, you wonder if maybe this is where you start seeing guys, like we already saw Montgomery jump ship, or guys maybe not lean to sign with Boris now, just because you see a lot of teams that just don't deal with Boris anymore. You know, like, I know more because I'm a Dodger fan, but LA does not deal with Boris. They really prefer not to. And they haven't re-signed, I believe, any of his clients really in recent history. I know they signed JD Martinez, but that was like a one-year deal last year, you know, and at that point, but it's just, it's really, really weird. And, you know, jumping back, like you said, Dallas Keuchel's agent in 2019 was Boris.
Yep.
And Kimbrel's was Dave Meter of Meter Sports.
Okay.
Or Sports Meter, who's still his agent now too. But, you know, that was another history of that. So,
yeah. Well, the Kimbrel thing kind of worked out because he got like a 3-year deal when he signed with the Cubs. Yeah. Like, that wasn't bad. So,
yeah. I was just seeing who the agents were at those times, but
yeah.
You just start to wonder, is this the beginning of the downward hill for Boris and his type of clients? And we're going to say that. And then next year he's going to have like massive deals for every single free agent that he's got. And they're going to sign like just fine. So anyways, so let's jump over and just have a quick little debate on, you know, the pitching side of things has been a hot topic recently because of the pitching injuries, right? Well, another thing that we've been seeing for the past, I mean, what, decade probably, is like load management and pitching. I think it's probably become more prevalent since 2018, 2019, really. But it's where you see young pitchers or even pitchers coming back off of injuries, they'll slow play them and they won't have them start the year and they want to have them on an innings limit. So they'll either, you know, start them in the majors and let them pitch a little bit and then send them to the minors, or maybe if it's a prospect, they keep them in the minors for a little while and have them do super short starts. You know, we see kind of both ends of that spectrum right now with Paul Skenes, who people think is ready for the major leagues. He's completely dominating down there, but he's pitched, what, 3 games? I think his longest outing's 3 1/3. And he just looks completely unhittable there, but they don't want to call him up because they want him to be on an innings limit, right? But then you have a team like the Marlins who today optioned Max Mayer, who had been probably their best pitcher so far this year, because they want to manage his innings now. So even though they've been struggling and he's their best starter this year, now they want to send him down so he can pitch once a week on these 3-inning spurts. And it's really just, it's kind of brought up a debate. Should they be left in the majors? Should they just go to the minors? Like, which way is the right way? I don't think there's a right way, but which way?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of an interesting topic. You know, Max Mayer, I watched him pitch. He pitched against the Braves on Saturday, and they couldn't hit him. I mean, it was crazy. Now, he didn't look, his pitches were like left in the bad spots and stuff, but his stuff was good enough. They just couldn't hit him. So I thought it was very interesting to talk about this today, because he got sent down today, and the Marlins fans were really the few Marlins fans that exist were really really upset about it, and I don't blame them. So you know, Max Meyer's dealt with a lot of injuries. He's coming off of, you know, I think Tommy John surgery, and he's, you know, he's a guy that is an injury risk. But you look at him and you look at some others, you know, Paul Skenes is one that's been a big topic. People are wondering, why is he not in the big leagues? You look at last year, Yuri Perez is another guy. He came up and he started three or four games for the Marlins, looked awesome, and they sent him down. So the Marlins do have a history of doing this, even when they were competing last year. So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, at one time the prevailing thought about when pitchers get ready to come up is either bring them into the major leagues and pitch them for as long as you can without, you know, until they get, you know, wore down a little bit, and then maybe you move them to the bullpen, or, you know, pitch them, just let them throw as many innings as they can. Don't have a pitch limit. That was a long time ago, but, or you can bring them up and start them in the bullpen and kind of work their way in. That's what the Braves did with a few of their guys. Spencer Strider in 2022, they brought him up and started him in the bullpen, and after a couple months they put him in the rotation. So it's interesting. It's kind of interesting to see, you know, because you think about, like, if you're pitching three innings at a time, that could work out of the big league bullpen. But you also, you know, I think the thought is that some of these guys want to start on a schedule. They want to keep them on that 5-day, every 6 days, you know, the regular rest type schedule. But if they're only pitching three innings in their starts, they're probably not, you know, you don't want them to tax the big league bullpen if you're not going to use them out of the bullpen. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to look at is, and you know, I think that it kind of coincides with the whole injury thing we talked about last week, where how do you best manage these young pitchers, get them up and get them seasoned while not getting them injured. And I think the best way, honestly, is just when they're in the minor leagues, make them pitch. Like, these guys need to pitch a lot. So, but it's definitely an interesting thing to look at. I really think there's going to be some kind of changes to this. Because, you know, but people need to calm down a little bit about, like, calling it tanking if you're not pitching these guys in the big leagues immediately and stuff. I definitely think it's something to kind of a good discussion point.
Yeah, I don't know if there's really a way that really matters the most here, right? Like, I think pitchers could use the time in the major leagues, even if it's in three inning spurts, to help grow their stuff, grow their confidence. Do that there, right? Like, I don't think Max Mayer is going to gain anything from going down to the minor leagues here. And they use this excuse, oh, we want him to try and, you know, start using a two-seamer or work on a two-seamer. It's like, you can do that while up in the majors. Like, you can do it just fine, right? Just let him stay up there and stay pitching. And then if he starts, you know, not performing, then at that point, you have a time to maybe send them down and say, hey, you know, we see your performance has lacked here and this and that. Like, we see teams all the time now go to, you know, more six-man rotations or more bullpen days. It's more prevalent than it's ever been now. I don't think having a guy that goes three or four innings on your major league team is a bad thing. Most teams would take that a lot of the time. You know, we've seen very successful teams do that. You know, the Braves have made a habit of that for a long time. They'll have the opener and then they'll have the bolt guy. You know, LA has done that the past few years. They're doing it this year with Ryan Yarbrough. It's been working just fine. Like, it there's not really a difference in throwing a bullpen guy and then having a bolt guy or bolt guys that go, and then, you know, or just going to a traditional bullpen game where you have somebody who's starting once. You know, one inning at a time, I should say. I don't know. I don't love the way the Marlins are going about it. The Pirates, I don't think, you know, Skeens obviously, I think, could probably come up. You can make the argument, hey, he's had like, what, 10 professional innings or something.
Yeah.
So maybe we want him to get more development there. But like, he was probably the closest thing to a pro-ready pitcher we had at the time. And he's absolutely dominating down there now. And not only have the Pirates now missed the day where they can't get, you know, they can't get the rookie eligible compensation like we were talking about for Jackson Holliday for bringing him up, but now he's missed the full service time, which means they're probably going to wait until June or July to call him up to where he's not even close to getting that. So he can't get the full year now. And it's like, it's just, I don't know. Like, I don't love the way they're going about it either, but I think they should just be up.
I think the one thing about Skeens that I'll say is that the Pirates seem to be, they've had a great start to the season. They seem to be competing to a certain level. They've looked really good. And, you know, I think that if you wait for Skeens for a couple months, then you can bring him up and go balls to the walls with him, where it's like he can go out there and just be a starting pitcher and just throw instead of trying to, you know, jerk him around between innings limits and pitch counts and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's something that you might look at with Skeens is the situation that the Pirates are in right now. They've had a good start to the season. They're rolling without him. And so let's make sure when he comes up, he stays up all year and stays in the same role all year. I think that's kind of what they're looking at. And then with Max Meyer, I mean, the Marlins aren't competing. So I'd say if you've got a limit on how much you want Max Meyer to throw this year, coming off of all the injuries and everything, I say just let him throw until he hits that innings limit, and then just shut him down. Like, because you're not going to win this year. You're 2-13, 3-13, whatever it is. So, you know, if I was the Marlins, you've got a young pitcher that started off really well. I would just let him throw. I mean, you know, there's no reason to have him. Like the thing about Skeens is, if you keep him down or manage his innings early, then he could be strong come August, September, maybe even October, the way the Pirates have started. But if you're the Marlins, like, who cares if Max Meyer is strong in September if he's going to have him on an innings limit? Like, he might as well be strong in early in the season, and then you can just shut him down when you don't want him to throw anymore. So I think that that's something to kind of, you know, keep in mind with these situations. And but we'll see. I do wonder if this becomes a topic with the CBA a little bit. It's not necessarily a service time manipulation thing as much as it's just, you know, like, if a guy is just obviously major league caliber right now, not having him in the big leagues, it's not great in the for the players, because they want their best, you know, they want to get rewarded for doing well. And it's not the best for the league, because I think Major League Baseball would love to see Paul Skeens out there in the big leagues right now. But it'll be interesting to see what if anything ever changes with this. But yeah, it'll be, you know, the whole opener thing's interesting, you know, an interesting way to look at it too.
I don't. There's Major League Baseball already tried to change it in the last
Yeah.
CBA. There's nothing else that's going to change. They're trying to already incentivize them, and teams like the Pirates just don't care, because they can look, oh, well, we can still get the extra year of service time. That's the difference here. You're going to see is, like, the Pirates are going to be a team that we've seen forever. They're super frugal in the way they're moving. Baltimore, they just got a brand new owner who's worth so much money, right? He's not worried about the extra year of service time for Jackson Holliday if he has to pay him a year early, because he's probably just going to end up doing it. Where the Pirates, they're going to lose Paul Skeens probably
I don't,
after
you know, I,
6 years.
like I say, I don't think Paul Skeens is, I don't think it's a service time manipulation thing
But
necessarily.
what you're saying is, how is Major League Baseball going to change it? They're not going to
Right.
change it.
Yeah.
There's nothing that they're going to
Yeah.
change, because teams are still going to do this. They're trying to incentivize them to call them up now. Had the Pirates called Paul Skeens up to start this year, they were incentivized to do that, because
Yeah. He could have
he could
won
get
Rookie
them
of
an
the Year.
extra, he could have won Rookie of the Year, got them an extra draft pick, which helps their future even more. But no, they want to keep him down because of all of this. It's like, it doesn't matter. There's no way to incentivize them, because they're going to have their own plans already in place.
Right.
It's just, and them saying, oh, well, we're just going to use the innings limit down there. We're like, just bring him up and do the innings limit there, because then he has at least still helping you, and he still has a chance, like, to be a dominant player for you and maybe even win Rookie of the Year. Like, if you bring Paul Skeens up and he's, like, completely dominant for 3 to 4 innings at a time, and maybe even becomes, like, at the beginning, a back-end reliever for you, right? Like a dominant back-end reliever. And he gets, you know, Bednar struggling, but, like, say he were to get save opportunities. And then in June or July, they're like, okay, well, we're ready to fully unleash you. And he becomes a starter. Like, at least he has that other major league time where you can fall back on it and say, like, look, I was a good reliever even. I was dominating at that time. And then now I turned into a good starter too. It's like, I don't get it half the time. And I don't know where there is to change, because they've tried to incentivize him
Yeah.
before and it's not really working.
Right. Well, if I had a solution, then I would bring it up, but I don't. So
Well,
that's the thing. Like,
we love to argue about things we don't have solutions for.
that's right.
It's
That's
the best
right.
thing.
So, but yeah.
But
So hopefully he's up soon, because he's gonna be fun to watch.
yeah, he's a lot of fun. So let's kind of jump over and talk about Jackie Robinson Day some. And I went through a few articles today while kind of prepping for the show, you know, some off MLB.com, some off even the History Channel Network, some out of the Negro Leagues Museum by Bob Kendrick. And just kind of put some highlights of his career that, you know, should be mentioned. You know, some of it, obviously people know, some of it they won't, but just kind of going on, we haven't gone through like a full history of kind of what Jackie Robinson Day is all about, what like his whole life and stuff. So figured it being Jackie Robinson Day, let's kind of go through that and understand the significance of what today means. So he was born in Cairo, Georgia in 1919. He had an older brother, Mac Robinson, was a silver medalist in 1936 at the Berlin Olympics in track and field there. In 1939, after, you know, he went to junior college or whatever they called it back then for 2 years, he enrolled at UCLA in 1939 in honor of his older brother, Frank, who had died in a motorcycle accident. And he became the first Bruin ever to letter in four different sports, which were football, basketball, track, baseball. He was actually playing semi-pro football because he had left before graduating a few credits short at UCLA, left and started playing semi-professional football before he was drafted to World War II in 1942. He never actually saw any action, but he was a captain, officer captain in the segregated camp there. He was honorably discharged in 1944. He had an incident on the, you know, one of the buses where he didn't want to go sit in the back, and there was a whole thing from there. But in 1945, he signed with the Negro Leagues, playing with the Kansas City Monarchs, where he went on to hit .387 that year. And then in 1946 is when he was signed by Branch Rickey and the Dodgers and assigned to the Montreal Royals, which was the Dodgers farm team, and he hit .349 in his 1 year in the minors. And then April 15th, 1947 is when he made his major league debut for the Dodgers. He went on to win the inaugural Rookie of the Year Award, which is now why it's called the Jackie Robinson Rookie of the Year Award. And then in 1949, he won MVP while hitting .342 with 37 stolen bases and his career high 124 RBIs in that season. It was an all-star every year from 1949 to 1954. He helped lead Brooklyn, they were the Brooklyn Dodgers at that time, to the 1955 World Series. And then on December 13th, 1956, he was traded to the Giants for Dick Littlefield and $30,000. And a month later, Robinson wrote a letter to the Giants owner, Horace Stoneham, that announcing that he was going to be retiring from baseball. There was a thing going around the hill. He went because he didn't want to play for the Giants. In Robinson's letter, he denied all of those rumors and stuff. But he was elected to the Hall of Fame in 1982. In 1962, after his playing career, he acted as a sportscaster, was a business exec at a coffee shop in New York called Chock Full of Nuts, and was active in civil rights groups, including the NAACP. He died in 1972 at the age of 53 after suffering from heart attack because he had heart disease and diabetes. And then in 1997, 42 was retired league-wide. Jackie Robinson Day was dedicated in 2004 to be, you know, every single year on April 15th. And then started in 2009 is when all teams wore 42 during their scheduled games on April 15th each year. So just kind of a thing of his life, but breaking the color barrier there and all his success that he went on to have there. Obviously, it's a monumental time, but, you know, Matt, you know, throughout the Jackie Robinson days that we've kind of remember, what, you know, what kind of have you learned or happy whatever about?
Yeah, just the whole Jackie Robinson Day thing is such a cool thing that Major League Baseball has done. You don't see this in other sports. It's literally just been Major League Baseball that has celebrated the one of their pioneers who, you know, just did so much for not only for baseball, breaking the color barrier, but just that was a big event in the world. Because at the time, baseball was the number one sport in the United States. And this was it was the first one to really have somebody break the color barrier. So it was such a big deal in the world. You know, it's something that's not just a baseball event. It's in history books. It's just a big deal. And, you know, Jackie Robinson was obviously an incredible athlete, an incredible player. Just he would have been a Hall of Famer regardless of the breaking the color barrier. he was, you know, just he's a he seems like a great guy. You know, everything about him was it was great, and just the fact that baseball has done this with retiring the number and then doing the honoring him every single year on the date of his debut is so cool. And you know, it's something I was, you know, last week the Braves were honoring Hank Aaron. I was watching the game, and just it's cool that that I think baseball taps a lot into that history of the good things that have happened in the sport at times. I think it's something that they do well. I think that just this the event of Jackie Robinson Day is always awesome.
Yeah, and you talk about even without the history of breaking the color barrier and all of that, like you're looking at a guy who, like you mentioned, would have been a Hall of Famer anyways. Just let's go over some of his career numbers here just to show like it, you know, in his 10 years, he had a 63.9 WAR according to Baseball Reference. He had a 313 batting average, a 410 on base, had a 133 OPS plus. He's a 7-time All-Star, MVP winner, Rookie of the Year, and a World Series champion. Of course, it has a batting title as well. Like, this was a top-level player. And then on top of the fact that you add in the historical meaning of what he was able to do at that time for the game and how much the game has advanced and everything because of his sacrifices and what he had to deal with during all of those times. Like, it's very, very special. And obviously, Jackie Robinson means a lot to the Dodgers organization. So I see a lot more of it every single year. You know, it's a big celebration there. I was able to go a couple years ago when to Jackie Robinson Day, and they were given a doing a giveaway jersey there. But to actually see, you know, Rachel Robinson, which is his wife, was able to still be there, even in her really advanced age. And it was just really cool moment to see her and see the reception that the fans of LA, who, you know, Jackie never even played in Los Angeles. He retired the year before they came here, like the reception there and what it just means to everyone still, was a really kind of powerful moment, which was just really, really cool to experience. And I wish everyone could have at least that experience one time, because it's very, very special. So, anyways, we just wanted to kind of give some history on what Jackie Robinson Day was, why it kind of means what it does. Obviously, we know the color barrier, but just more behind his story there. So, it was kind of really cool that we could talk about that a little bit here. But let's go ahead and jump over to our players and moments of the week, and kind of highlight some of those players, and then we'll go ahead and head on out of here. But let's go ahead and start with moments of the week, Matt. So what do you got?
Yeah, so my moment of the week was one that I picked because I knew that Damian wouldn't pick it because it involves the Padres doing something good, and David wouldn't pick it, even though he's not here anyways, because of the Cubs doing something bad. And that game on, I believe it was on last Monday at, while we were recording and then finished after we were recording, was absolutely insane. The Cubs jumped up to an 8-0 lead in that game. Which was started, I believe, by was it Ben Brown that started that game? I'm trying to remember. I'm looking at it right now. I forgot to check on it earlier.
I want to say it's been, but
I think it was Ben Brown. Let's see. It was Assad. Assad started the game. He pitched five really good innings. You know, it was I think he went into the sixth and then he gave up a couple of walks or something and got guys on base and the inherited runner scored, but he looked good. And the Padres starter Yu Darvish, who the former Cub got blown up, then their, you know, first reliever that came and got blown up. It was 8-0 in the sixth inning, and in the bottom of the sixth the Padres rallied for 7 runs off of Assad and Jose Quas, and then they came back and actually won the game on a won the game on a Fernando Tatis Jr. home run in the bottom of the eighth and won it 9-8. So, you know, there was a couple of cool things about the game that obviously the you know, the just the massive comeback. I think it might have been the biggest comeback in Padres history. I think I might have read that. But either way, that was an awesome you know, that was an awesome comeback. And, you know, the it's something that, you know, it's good vibes for the Padres because last year their biggest thing was they could not win close games. They couldn't win in the, they couldn't play in the clutch. They really struggled in close games. They lost all those extra inning games, and you know, it kind of gave them a little bit of a spark. They've had a fairly good start to the season, especially considering the opponents they played so far. So you know, the it gave them a little bit of a spark. I thought it was a really cool moment for them to have that big win. It was also a, no, the next night was the nationally televised game, I think. But I thought it was a very interesting game, and you know, a big time moment for the Padres.
Yeah, that was a really big moment. I think I even went to sleep before that game was over.
Yeah.
And then I woke up and saw that, and obviously I had a bunch of people reacting to it because of, I know a lot of Cubs fans and stuff, but
yeah.
Yeah, it was. It seemed like it was a really intense game. Like you mentioned, the Padres, one thing that they weren't able to do last year either is like when they got down, they were pretty much out. They came back with, you know, that 8 runs there. And then on a Friday night, they came down for back from down 7-3 and won that game too. So against LA. So I don't like seeing the Padres do well, but they do look pretty good right now. So that's a very good moment of the week. Cause you're right. I would not have picked that one. But my moment I went with this week was we saw Giancarlo Stanton play against the Marlins and he hit a homer against them. And that was the last team that he basically needed a homer against. So now he's homered against all 30 teams in Major League Baseball. I know like Pujols had done it and a few people had done it as well, but I feel like it's kind of one of the more rare things that we see happen. I should have looked up the stat of how many people have actually did it. And I don't want to go look it up right this second, cause it'd probably take me too long to find it. But I just thought it was a cool moment that, you know, we see that somebody is homeward against all 30 teams. So it was kind of happened early on last week, but I didn't really think of anything else that kind of jumped over it for me. So that's what I went with.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, I think Giancarlo Stanton is somebody who I think people forget how good of a career he's had because he's dealt with injuries and struggles since he's been in the Yankees, especially over the last few years. But he's over 400 home runs now. He's at 406, and he's only 34. So there's a legitimate possibility that he could get to 500 home runs. And, you know, and if he does, I mean, he's a potential Hall of Fame guy. He's got over 40 wins above replacement. He would be one of the lower Hall of Famers, but he's a non-steroid 500 home run hitter. Then I think there's going to be a lot of people that want to put him in. So we'll see if he's able to stay generally healthy. He's in a lot better shape this year than he has been over the past couple of years. Hopefully he stays healthy to a high enough level to be able to, you know, hit 20, 25 homers this year and try to maybe even become a, you know, maybe become a, maybe get to that 500 mark eventually. But that's a very cool moment. There's not too many players that have homered against every team in the big leagues. But the guy I picked for my player of the week is Mason Miller. This might be the first time I've ever picked a reliever, by the way, for player of the week. But
it might be the first time for a reliever picked at all.
Yeah, it might be. But my God, Mason Miller. He has been absolutely ridiculous so far this year. His last three games – or this week he pitched in three games, got three saves, did not give up a run, and he did not give up a hit, he did not hit a batter, he faced you know, nine batters and he struck out seven of them, and he has looked so good. His fastball velocity is sitting currently on the season at 101.1 on average. And I mean, he's one of those guys that, man, I just hope that they keep him as a reliever. Like, it's kind of like Aroldis Chapman, where he was supposed to be a starter. He was this top prospect, but man, he was so good as a reliever, throwing the way that he was, throwing so hard, and you just don't want to mess that up. And I think Mason Miller is kind of that way where you just do not want to mess this up. He's looked so good as a reliever. He's the type of like back end guy that's going to be worth like 3 to 4 wins above replacement as a reliever. Like he is that good. He's already been worth 0.6 wins above replacement this year. I would love to see him get to, you know, have a healthy, fantastic year and see what he can do going forward. Because this guy is awesome. He's so much fun to watch. That fastball is just incredible. And he's got good off-speed stuff, too. So, you know, we'll see if he's able, if Oakland, the Oakland Athletics, I should just say the Athletics now, apparently.
Yeah.
If the Athletics decide to keep him as a reliever, which they should, because I don't know that he could handle the starter workload. He never has in the minors, but I hope they do, because I don't want this guy to be ruined by having to, you know, by getting injured because they're trying to pitch him too many innings for a guy that throws so hard and everything. But very, very cool, very cool week for him. And look, I mean, I was adamant in the offseason about the A's are not the worst team in baseball. The ownership and the situation is the worst in baseball, but the team on the field is bad. But it's not as bad as the White Sox, and it's probably not as bad as the Rockies, and it's probably about like the Nationals. So, so far, they're 7-9. I mean, that's not worst team in baseball. I mean, it's not good, but it's not the worst team in baseball. So, good for Mason Miller on being a big part of that.
Yeah, Mason Miller's a good story for the Las Vegas Athletics of Sacramento while rooted in Oakland.
Hey, you can't really say that. Rooted in Oakland. It's been taken down.
That's a really good way to spin all that. Yeah, it has been, which is funny. But
not only taken down, but taken down and blocked.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Which, I mean, it's still funny that you can go to the Oakland Athletics X page now and you cannot reply to any single tweet that they put out, because only people that the Athletics mention can be can reply to that, which is hilarious. But Mason Miller is really, really fun to watch. I liked watching him when he had that little bit of starting experience last year, and then he got hurt, and it just kind of seemed like the natural way was to kind of bring him to the bullpen, at least for now. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets another opportunity to start at some point, just because the stuff is so electric there. And you know, you could always fall back on the reliever role where he could have a good upside as a starter, but he is so fun to watch. And like you mentioned, his 3 innings, his 3 saves, he faced 9 batters. He struck out 7 of them. Like, he has like the 8 fastest pitches in baseball so far this year as well, which is insane. So Mason Miller's a really good pick here, and not a bad first reliever to ever be mentioned on the players of the week here. So the guy that I went with a homer pick here, but it's deserving because of the start that Tyler Glasnow had against the Minnesota Twins. It was only 1 start week, which usually we try to avoid that too, but he had 7 innings pitched there. He allowed 3 hits, 0 walks, but 14 strikeouts. It was tied for his career high on strikeouts. And you think that many strikeouts, usually you're going to have a lot of pitches too. He was at like 88 pitches or 86. It's one of the two. He could have like easily went at least another inning, if not more, and had more strikeouts or whatever. But because we're so early on in the season, he just they pulled him there, and the LA had the lead at the time. It was a big lead too, so they weren't really worried about it. But man, you could see the stuff that when he was on, it was fascinating. He was just blowing people away, and nobody could touch the fastball or the slider or anything he was really doing. Just completely dominated that Twins lineup.
Yeah, Tyler Glasnow's got incredible stuff. He always has. You know, when he first came up, the command was an issue, and he kind of rectified that enough. And then, of course, the injuries have been the real issue for him since he's been at the big leagues. But hopefully, and that's probably part of the pulling him, even though he was only at 86 pitches. And I tell you one other thing about pulling him in the 7th inning at 86 pitches: if you throw him back out there for the 8th inning, and he throws, you know, 3 more strikeouts, he's got a shot at the big league record, and you just can't. But his pitch count probably would have been over 100, yeah. And you're just like, man, we don't want to push him, but he's got a shot at a big league record. So pulling him up for the 7th was probably the best for everybody, so they didn't have to make that decision. But You know, that was an incredible outing and something that you don't see very often.
Yeah, well, if there's something we know about Dave Roberts and tough decisions, he doesn't mind pulling somebody early.
That's true.
I've seen that one pretty
A
a lot
few
of times,
times.
but yeah. But yeah, actually, he starts today too, in just a little bit, so that's pretty cool as well. But that will wrap it up for this week's episode of the Batfoot Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you guys back here next week.